And let us take some deep breaths and let all the rest of it go. As I offer you these words for your meditation and prayer, followed by a time of silence, followed by an opportunity to light candles as Brian begins the meditation music. Let these be our words for meditation. Death is a mystery that we must all see and meet, but love is a mystery in which we live and breathe and have our being. It is an eternal truth which surrounds us to be touched and treasured and known. It is an abiding element which has no bounds of time, no limits to its generous outpouring, no fears to make it weak. Love is our great adventure of faith. Let us follow the tone into the silence. Well, it is awfully good to be here with you this morning, even though it was a little longer than I used. I left home at 9, before 9. At any rate, that is that. Here we are in February, that month of love. February can have moments that are bleak and cold, as some of us already know, as I recalled when I was in the Dallas airport on Thursday, getting the last flight out back here to Austin. A time of year when we are inclined to yearn for spring and its promises. So we are fortunate that this month of February, this month of love, arrives just when we need it the most. I want to talk with you today about love as we experience it throughout our lives. Valentine's Day, as we all know, is about romantic love, even sentimental love. Hearts and flowers, champagne, candy, the works. It may be good for the economy, but for all of us to go out and buy those gifts for our loved ones on Valentine's Day. But today I'd like to go beyond the romantic and the sentimental to look at some additional faces and developmental phases of love. The first phase in this developmental look at love takes place in the family. Children are hardwired to form attachments to the persons who care for them, who love them and have the children's best interests at heart. Included in the family attachments are the family's pets. In their relationship with pets, children love and feel loved in return. And the mutuality of the love of the family is crucial for a developing sense of self. As children form attachments to pets and other humans, they learn to make some meaning in the universe and to emerge from the, quote, blooming, buzzing confusion that William James called the mind of the infant. Childhood explorations give us the courage to develop relationships during our entire lifetimes. A person blessed by love early in the family has a greater capacity for expanding the circle of love to include friends outside the family. It seems to me that the love we find in friendship is one of the most long-lasting types of attachment, a phase of love that we need our whole life long. An artist whom I have long admired, and I know many of you have too because you've spoken to me about her, is Mae Sarton. We have called her a Unitarian Universalist, although she might have rejected it. Her literary works, especially the poems and journals, hold much meaning for me. Later in her life, she disclosed more and more of herself, revealing that for her, friendships based on trust were very problematic, even with those persons whom she loved, such as Judy, her longtime partner. But even when life offered her nothing but frustrations and disappointments, still a love of nature enriched her daily existence, and seemed to provide her with a reason for keeping on. Here's a passage from At 70, one of her journals. So, what is the inward order that makes it possible to shut out the chaos around me as I sit here? Perhaps a strong sense of what my priorities are. First, friends, then work, and then the garden. If I died suddenly, how bitterly I should regret work undone, friends unanswered. As for the garden, that is my secret extravagance, and one has to have one. I learned when my mother died that a garden dies quickly without a loving gardener to keep it alive. In a year, hers had become a jungle. So the garden is perhaps irrelevant as an ethical compulsion. No one but me really sees this garden, suffers when there is drought, rejoices when a rose I had thought dead suddenly flowers, or the tree peony, which looked quite gone, shows a spray of new leaves and a sudden renaissance. The garden is where my madness lies, and that is a more useful madness than drunkenness or a tantrum. The garden takes care of the demon very well these days, she says. Sometimes a friendship develops into a bond of intimate commitment. A powerful statement about such intimate commitment is contained in the song The Rose by Amanda McBroom. Many of you will remember the way Bette Midler sang it in the movie by the same name. Well, today we have the choir to sing it, and we have Brian to accompany us. So please feel free to sing along. You'll find the words on the insert in your order of service. You can stay seated if you like, or stand up.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. And thank all of you for singing along. Attachments grow into friendship. Friendship sometimes becomes an intimate bond between two people. But for love to be love, at whatever phase of life or with whatever face, an indispensable element is compassion. Compassion, literally, means feeling with, understanding the other's joy and sorrow, feeling them with intensity and sincerity. This story of compassion comes to us from the Jewish Hasidic tradition. Two friends lived on adjoining lands, one alone and the other with his wife and children. They harvested their grain, and one night the man without a family awoke and looked at his sheaves stacked beside him. "How good God has been to me," he thought, "but my friend with his family needs far more grain than I." So he carried some of his store to his friend's field. And the other, surveying his own harvest, thought, "How much I have to enrich my life, and how lonely my friend must be with so little of this world's joys." So he arose and carried some of his grain and placed it on his friend's stack. And in the morning, when they both went forth to glean again, each saw his heap of sheaves undiminished. The exchange continued until one night in the moonlight, the friends met, each with his arms filled on the way to the other's field. At the point where they met, the legend says, a temple was built. Many of us are familiar with the passage about love from the Christian scripture in the Apostle Paul's letter to the early church in Corinth in Greece. Here is a modern interpretation by a former congregant of mine, Tom Vernon, of that same well-known description of love. "Love is slow to lose patience. It looks for a way of being constructive. It is not possessive. It is neither anxious to impress, nor does it cherish inflated ideas of its own importance. Love has good manners and does not pursue selfish advantage. It is not touchy. It does not compile statistics of evil or gloat over the wickedness of other people. On the contrary, it is glad with all good men and women when truth prevails. Love knows no limit to its endurance, no end to its trust, no fading of its hope. It can outlast anything. It is, in fact, the one thing that still stands when all else has fallen." Perhaps it is appropriate that we celebrate Abraham Lincoln's birthday in the same week as Valentine's Day, for his face of love was one of compassion leading to justice. When we read of Lincoln's impact on our history, we realize how misguided and even racist some of his ideas were in the context of our own time. And we see that his personal grace was in his work for the emancipation of the slaves and a way to hold the nation together. What motivated him, I think, went beyond the racism of his time. He was motivated by a concern and a love for persons whom he had never met and who would never meet him. It was a love that went far beyond the boundaries of his own experience with people, a love that sought to enable others to become full, functioning persons with rights and responsibilities. This kind of love toward people we have never met is called justice. His dedication to justice made Abraham Lincoln live in ambiguity, an unhappy personal life, and yet the goal of fuller, freer lives for thousands, thousands of other people. He faced the paradox. He lived the paradox. This is the kind of love that goes beyond the boundaries of our own experiences and personal needs. This church continues to create its own covenant or set of promises of how people here agree to treat each other. Actually, a covenant is an agreement that is based on love that is made relevant to an organization. It goes beyond the personal likes and dislikes of one another to encompass the good of the church. At the end of the service, there will be more information about the opportunity to continue the covenant creation process. We'll have special notes about it. I believe that there is a strong connection between love and meaning. A foundation of loving and being loved makes it possible for us to continue in the search for meaning, the search that we begin as children and continue with the development of compassionate friendships and intimate bonds, a search that might eventually lead us to acts of compassion and justice in the world. In our creation of meaning in life, I believe that absence of love manifests itself as absence of meaning. A work of art that confronts me with a vision of what it is to seek meaning and love at the same time is The Seventh Seal, a film by the late Ingmar Bergman. I am indebted to my good friend, the Reverend Bob Shibley. Some of you knew Bob when he was the minister in First Unitarian Universalists in Houston. I'm indebted to him for his insights into this film as we discussed it. The main character in the movie is a knight who has returned weary and disillusioned after fighting in the Crusades. He travels with his squire, but he knows that death also accompanies him. He asks death to give him more time in which to discover meaning in his life. He is a loner, a person removed from the crowd, and yet he also looks for meaningful love. At the end of the film, he is reunited with his wife, and it is only then that death claims him. But during his journeys until then, he finds three opportunities to make meaning and find active love. First, he comes upon a young woman who is about to be burned at the stake as a witch. She has been tortured and is close to death, so there is no rescuing her from her fate. But he draws near and slips a medicine into her mouth when the guard isn't looking. Something to stop the pain. The meaning of life and the message of love is in showing compassion. Secondly, the knight meets a young couple with a child. They're traveling acrobats, mimes, actors. They sit down, and the man in the troupe talks about his wife, their life together, and his religious faith, which he acknowledges is, quote, like loving someone out there in the darkness who never appears, no matter how loudly you call. They share strawberries and cream. The knight says, I shall remember this moment, the silence, the twilight, the bowls of strawberries and cream, your faces in the evening light, the baby sleeping, the sound of the lyre. I'll try to remember what we've talked about. I'll carry this memory between my hands as carefully as if it were a bowl filled to the brim with fresh milk. And it will be an adequate sign. It will be enough for me. This is the second meaning of life and love for the night, to share the goods of the world with others, to form bonds of human attachment and friendship, and to savor these special moments, simply for themselves. And the third opportunity for finding meaning and love comes when the knight acts dishonestly. And this is hard for him because he is a man of integrity, in order to save the lives of these friends with whom he has shared the strawberries. Death asks him over a game of chess they are playing if the young couple and the baby will be traveling with him. The knight panics and stalls for time, hoping that the couple will look up and see Death sitting with him and will escape in time. He stalls by knocking over the chess pieces as if by accident and by pretending not to know how things stand. Of course, Death remembers, but the knight has bought enough time with this ploy to let the couple and their baby run away. The meaning of life and the ultimate concern of love in this instance is to be an instrument of justice in saving lives. So for Bergman, at least in this film, the meaning of life and love has three facets or three faces. First, to live in compassion for others. Second, to savor the special moments of connection in friendship. And third, to create justice by saving lives. The phases of love in the film encompass the love of friends, the love of a cherished partner, love that springs from compassion, and love that leads us to act in justice for those whom we do not even know. From our earliest years, we create meaning. Meaning that develops through our phases and faces of love. From our attachments to our pets, to love found in friendship and intimate relationships, to compassion and caring that lead us to do acts of justice for humankind, we find meaning. May we celebrate all of these meanings of love, not just during this month of February, but every month and every day. So may it be.